You are listening to Mommying While Muslim podcast, where hosts Uzma and Zeba share their personal stories of mommying in a post 9/11 world. This podcast is designed with the Muslim American mom in mind, so grab a cup of coffee and pull up to their table.
Assalamu alaikum, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Mommying While Muslim podcast. This is Uzma Jafri.
And this is Zeba Hassan. And Uzma, what is up with your raspy, sexy voice, girl? What is going on?
I feel like Phoebe Buffay.
Do you want some of my snotty tissues?
Yes, I did not grab anybody's snotty tissues, however, but I think I either had the flu or COVID last week. And I mean, it was like literal prostration. And now you realize as you get older, what fun stuff happens to your body when you get sick. And the reason why I think it's COVID is because I have these weird rashes and my joints are swollen and I have to take steroids just to get the swelling down and be able to use my hands. So I'm like, oh, great. Now I get to see a rheumatologist. This is so much fun. Because flu doesn't necessarily do that to you. It can in very rare circumstances. I just don't think I'm that special. So I think it's COVID. Everybody continue to take precautions. The boosters are out this fall. Please take them. If you believe that you get sick because of COVID or the government is tracking you to ship you to Mars or something, please DM us or email salam@mommywomuslim.com. And I'm happy to answer any questions or concerns you have about the booster.
That's so fun. That's so funny. But yeah, it is definitely running rampant. But you know, I'm just at the stage, like I'm not under any conspiracy or anything like that, but I'm also like, COVID is going to be a natural part of our life, like the flu, like these types of things.
Exactly.
So, you know, we can run and hide, but it's still going to get you. Yeah. But the funny thing is we were together the week before and I literally said, I'm going to end up with COVID.
I know. She manifested it.
And then you got it. So I do have to say, I paid Sadaqa because I was like, okay.
Ah, damn, I forgot to do that.
Because I'm like, I'm always the one that gets sick for long periods of time.
Yes, I don't ever get sick. So this is like really weird.
So I'm sad that you got sick, but I do have to admit that I'm happy it wasn't me because, you know, when I get sick, I'm down for the count.
Yes, so I'm happy it's not you as well. Yeah.
So I'm glad you're on the mend and I'm glad you got your sexy voice because I know how much you love that.
I do love the sexy voice.
She loves the sexy voice. Ever since we were kids, she loves that sexy voice. But, you know, before we get into our next month's topic, I just wanted to like quickly like recap some of the things that maybe you learned during Green Muslims Month that your family is putting into place in your household.
Well, even before Green Muslims and sort of the inspiration for the Green Muslim series was our decrease of using plastic water bottles.
Yes.
That was something like, I mean, I would say for the entire length of my marriage, we've been doing that. And it's just always worn on me. Like, how can we do better? How can we do better? How can we do better? So the water cooler system has worked really well. You know, I know it's a little bit of extra cost for people, but you know, I really wanted this water cooler because it matched my other appliances. So I bought that. And then I got the service where, you know, I literally just trade out 5 bottles a week. They drop off 5 bottles. So we're just exchanging bottles back and forth. The water tastes great. It's refrigerated. We put it in all of these giant water bottles we've collected as a sports family. And, you know, I'm staying really hydrated, like with this giant bottle that you gave me. It's full like 3 times a day. So I get my 3 liters and I'm just really excited. So that's our little contribution. We're doing, we're trying to get from Costco those things that come like in one box, but they're not individually packaged because those individual packages are all plastic, right?
Yeah.
So we're trying to get them in one big plastic bag and then separate them into our reusable, sealable silicone pouches. So those are things, you know, because the kids take lunch, they insist on taking lunch from home. And I want to be able to minimize the disposable products that we're using. So, and we've already transitioned to the glass storage. So that's been, it hasn't been as horrible as I thought. You know, it's actually nice because if I give a nice glass thing to somebody with food in it, I feel good that they have something pretty and they remember that it's mine versus the plastic stuff. Yeah. You know, they're like, I don't remember where the plastic storage came from, but that pretty like, you know, section little glass thing is Uzma. So it comes which is really nice. That's what about you? What changes
you know, in mind? Well, you know, we've been working on this, this green initiative in our family for a while, including purchase of a couple of electric cars, which I know we are blessed and thankful and all that good stuff that we can be able to do. But considering my daughter is like a green advocate, like
guests last month,
I know we had to kind of make those changes. I obviously doing really well with the with the disposable things, we've kind of cut down our zero waste. We're not at zero waste, but we're pretty close because we compost as well. And the reality is what people didn't, and the one thing that I even really acknowledged, and I wanted to say, you don't have to do all of the things. Every single guest was like, take one or two choices, like do those, implement them, and then you can slowly start building up on that. So it really doesn't have to be this all or nothing, like I'm going to get the solar panels, I'm going to only do electric, I'm going to live off the grid. Like, yeah, that would be nice and great and all that fun stuff in an ideal world. However, we don't live in that world. And so small changes can matter. Cut down your meat consumption. Instead of eating meat 7 days a week, eat it 4 days a week. Like, it's not, one, it's going to be better for your health, and it's going to be better for the environment. So I really appreciated all of our guests, and I'm so excited about this upcoming month, because this October we are bringing back prior guests who moved, inspired, awed, and educated us over the years. And I can say years at this point, everyone does. But this month, we've got four people that have agreed to return to share how they are doing after overcoming such great adversity, because we always want to know, like, where are they now? The first of these guests is Sumaya Khan, who has trusted. Do you like how I said the Khan? Like, I feel so good.
Oh, man, you said that ha perfectly. I'm so proud of you.
Who trusted us with her raw story of love and loss and is here to share how she's doing now. You'll probably remember her as the curator of Chai and Chocolate and the co-founder of Widowed and Muslim. And she's a wise, wise soul that we really learned a lot from. And we're only too honored to have her back. Assalamu alaikum and welcome, Sumaya.
Assalamu alaikum, Sumaya.
Thank you for having me.
So we kick off the podcast, and we know you've done this before. We kick off the podcast by asking a little bit about your momming story and your momming philosophy. For those who haven't heard your episode before, do you mind resharing those?
Sure. I'm a mother of two. I have a 17-year-old son and a 14-year-old daughter. And in terms of philosophy, I'm not sure I really have one. I'm just kind of figuring it out as we go.
You're a pantser. That's awesome.
That's the best philosophy.
Just try my best at this point.
Yeah. Alhamdulillah. That's awesome. So share with the audience a little bit about your family background, where you're from, where you are now, whatever you're comfortable sharing. We promise, like, nobody will stalk you except for me.
Yeah. So I am in San Jose, California, the Bay Area. And I just moved back about 2 years. Yeah. And prior to that, I was in Connecticut for 18 years in New Haven, and, you know, started, you know, moved there early in my marriage and, you know, started my family there, you know, built a community there. And after everything that happened, you know, after a couple of years, it made sense to move back, to California to be closer to family.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a big change. We'll have to get into that. Seba?
No, yeah. For those, like, before we get into that, you know, for those of, obviously go back, and we're going to share in our show links the previous episode. So, but for those of you who are like, I really want to just know right now and kick it off, can you give us a little bit of a synopsis of the last time you were here? And then we'll get into what's kind of gone on since then.
Yeah, it's, I had to go back and look up the dates of when we talked last. And yeah, it's been about 3 years. Yeah. And so a lot has happened. So what we talked about last time was I had in 2020 had been 3 years since I lost my husband of 18 years to a 6-month battle with cancer. And that was in 2017. He was only 42. And so, you know, I kind of shared about that whole piece of my life. 2017 was also the year that I co-founded Sanctuary Kitchen, which is a nonprofit program in the New Haven area that partners with refugee and immigrant chefs to build economic community, economic opportunity and community and authentic connections through food. And so that was a huge part of my grief process and, you know, what I really poured myself into, to developing and growing the program and building and really leaning into that supportive community, which was full of resilient women who were also starting new lives, who had also gone through their own grief. And so it was a key part of my, my journey and really what got me through those first couple of years. And in 2021, I decided to move my family closer to my extended family here in the Bay Area, and kind of start fresh again. So yeah, it's been quite a whirlwind, since we last spoke, you know, moving, all of that. I don't know how much you want me to go into that yet.
Yeah, no, we'll kind of guide you with the questions and stuff to direct it just a little bit and follow you along, of course. So we know the grief never ends, but it's like 2021 and moving your family across the country. I mean, that's a huge, huge deal considering the history you built for yourself and your family in Connecticut. So, you know, at the time, it still felt very raw when we were talking to you, even though it was 3 years out. So now we're 6 years out.
Yeah.
What does it look like now? Like, we know grief comes in waves, but how are you handling it now? What does it look like now for you?
Yeah. And, yeah, this month will actually be 6 years, since Arthur passed. And, like you said, it's not as raw. It's definitely still there, but it morphed into a very different, kind of
cat baby. I heard her
creature. Yeah. Yeah.
I thought it was a baby. I was like, she doesn't have babies.
He's like, wait, what are you doing?
Making a
home
appearance
today. And, but yeah, it's, you know, my periods of survival mode are now fewer and far between. I think right now what I feel the most is the loss of what would have been. You know, my kids are older now and they're more independent. They have their own social lives. They don't really like hanging out with me, like doing stuff. So, you know, I feel like, okay, this would have been the time that Arthur and I kind of would have reconnected as a couple, you know, now that like the small, like dealing with younger children and, the physical needs that they have. So like, you know, kind of entering that phase of our lives. And so that, you know, that makes me sad, you know, about not having that. And, but I'm also using this time now that I do have a little bit more time, you know, for myself, you know, to focus on myself, you know, just, I'm exercising, you know, I'm trying to challenge myself physically. I'm, you know, trying to like get more social again and focus on my spirituality. And, you know, alhamdulillah, there's a lot of opportunities here in the Bay Area for that. And so, you know, it's challenging and it's hard. I'm not the most extroverted person. So it's like kind of forcing myself to like open up to new possibilities, you know, try to push myself outside of my comfort zone. And not let my grief and, you know, fears of being like vulnerable kind of hold me back. So, yeah, I'm just kind of trying to grow myself as a person, travel, you know, attend social events that I wouldn't otherwise, meet new people. It's hard at this age to make new friends.
Yeah, oh yeah, making new friends sucks.
No, I 100% get that. And you mentioned your children as they're getting older, obviously there's less day-to-day physical environment, you know, physical interaction with them because they're doing their own thing. But one, how are they doing as they're obviously 6 years out for them? And what kind of resources that were available to them that you've used that you can tell us now have been really, really helpful in their grief process?
Yeah, alhamdulillah, they're doing better this year. It's been a little bit more smooth. You know, they were doing pretty well, when we were getting ready to leave New Haven, and we were all kind of at a point where we're like, okay, moving is an option and it's not, it wasn't not necessarily, something it became something that we were actually looking forward to. And and it was also kind of a natural transition for my son, because he was starting high school, So it was one of those things like, okay, if we're going to do it, this is kind of the time. But, and we were, you know, I brought the kids into that conversation and how they felt about it. And, you know, they seemed okay with it, with the idea. And we, you know, we made the move. It was a huge move. I don't recommend a cross-country move.
Cross-country. Oh my gosh. And like,
once in a lifetime, it's an experience. Then after that, it's just,
you know, emptying a house of 13 years. And I mean, it was definitely sad. And, you know, even up until, you know, of course I was like, is this the right choice? And we came out here and it was all like great in the beginning. But then the novelty kind of wore off and, it really, especially for my daughter, who's, a lot like her dad in terms of like, she's a lot more reserved and introverted and, has a harder time, with transitions. So she really struggled, that first year. You know, she was in a new middle school and, you know, she all left all her friends behind in New Haven, and it came to the point she was like, okay, I'm gonna, you know, reapply to her old school in New Haven, because she was like, she wanted to move back, and you know, so we had those really tough conversations, and it was a very dark period for her, for so many reasons. You know, moving, middle school, puberty, like everything just happening at once, grief, of course. You know, so we started working with a therapist, here and, you know, to help her kind of get through it. And it was kind of like, it was therapy, it was like family support, it was, you know, trying to get her physically active in sports, you know, like kind of a multi-pronged approach to kind of hit it from all ways. And, you know, so it, she got through it, and things are much better, and she has, you know, her new friends, and now just started high school in another school. So we'll see, jury's out on how that's going to go. But, yeah, I mean, I really leaned into the community here and what they have for the youth, through the various massages, you know, helicas, youth programming, camps. And, you know, I really, it was a new experience for them, and sometimes they resisted. But eventually they, you know, they formed relationships in those environments. And so that really helped them, you know, settle in.
That's awesome. So you had not just secular, but also Muslim centered resources to help. Anything specific in the Muslim community that is available in the Bay Area for grieving families or families with early losses?
Not specifically. There's been a few, especially since COVID, you know, there have been, you know, a lot more Islamic scholars kind of speaking around grief, and there's like workshops, and Omar Suleiman has a whole series on for those left behind. But I feel like they're still very adult-centered, and you know, they've been great for me, but not necessarily child specific.
Exciting news. The Asian Real Estate Association of America will be hosting their 20th National Convention in Chicago, Illinois from October 12th until the 14th. Guidance Residential's Senior Vice President Hussam Qutb will be a distinguished speaker at the area event during the breakout session on Friday, October 13th from 2:30 to 3:30 p.m. The session will revolve around the compelling topic of the values of niche lending. You're invited to join Guidance Residential and be a part of this momentous occasion. Come together and pave the way for the future of the real estate industry by fostering collaboration and embracing innovation. See you there.
So in the interim, since we spoke, you have started Widowed and Muslim. So tell us about that and how and whom it's helped.
Yeah. So when I actually listened to the previous interview briefly, and I had just alluded to it, that my friend Amina and I were talking about, you know, developing something. So yes, we, what's the timeline here?
I think it was late 2020 or early 2021.
Yeah. So 2020, probably soon after we spoke, my friend Amina Sayed, who, I think I mentioned she lost her husband a year before me. You know, we were childhood best friends and, you know, the same age, or husbands were similar age. So she founded, she started a WhatsApp group, for the few of us that she knew, who, you know, were young widows. And, you know, we just were like texting each other, and there was maybe like 8 of us, and not just here in the US, but like in England, in Saudi Arabia, in Malaysia, like all over. And we were all connected by like some mutual friend. You know, I have a friend who knows somebody who's gone through it. Can you talk to her, kind of thing? And it really was so beneficial for us, because we finally had that faith element and the cultural element that had been missing from all like the support groups and therapy that we had kind of individually mm-hmm. experienced. And that kind of transitioned into a monthly virtual meeting, thanks to Zoom and COVID. We're like, oh, this is an option now. So we started meeting monthly virtually with these women. And within a year, we doubled in size. And wow. And in, I think 2021, we kind of officially called ourselves Widowed and Muslim. And we started an Instagram page, and we have a private Facebook group. And we have about 50 members from around the world now.
Wow.
Yeah. So in the meantime, we've had a few local meetups around the country. And we're just about to launch our website in the coming hopefully days. So I don't know when this is going to be released, but hopefully by then. And it's a kind of a landing page, one to for Muslim women to kind of find a group that, you know, who can they can join and have that shared experience. But also it's a resource page right now. So we've collected kind of a library of resources that we found beneficial. And so these are materials that are already existing, nothing that we created. So, but we just think they're helpful. So from Islamic resources, you know, around Idda and inheritance and, you know, janazas, et cetera, to parenting resources, to podcasts, like we've included your podcast on it. You know, financial information, legal information. So kind of all the different areas that we have found that we've had to look up in our grief journeys and our like post loss lives, you know, whether it's like logistics to spirituality. So it's been slow, because we're all kind of juggling a lot of, you know, things at the same time. We're all solo parents. We all have jobs. And so it's taken some time, but we're really excited about, you know, bringing this to the community. Because like I said, there's been a void, and, you know, there isn't like a central place for Muslims who are going through loss. You know, right now this is widow specific, but there are other resources on there that would be beneficial to anybody who's experienced any type of loss.
Right. No, that's amazing. And I remember when we first saw the IG account come up, we were like, oh, this is funny. We wonder if this is Sumaya. And we didn't make the connection until we like reached out to you the second time. We're like, oh, it was her. Because yeah. I mean, it doesn't really identify you or Amna on there, because it is just so general and welcoming. And, it is very like community. There's not like one champion, because everybody is championing for each mm-hmm. other. So the fact that you're not only working towards healing yourselves, you're healing other people so that they don't have to go looking right. for help, which I think is just so, so huge. And that's one of the reasons why this podcast exists too, so that we can bring all the people that heal all the other mothers together and say, hey, this is where you find them. So we so appreciate and are so honored that we made your website, and we would love to know what that address is, because regardless of whenever this episode drops, we'd like to include it in the show notes so people can go find
absolutely.
It.
Yeah, absolutely. It's basically widowedandmuslim.org. Very simple.
Perfect. Love that.
Oh, sweet and simple.
Sweet and simple. And you know, this is one of those instances, like you said, like, you know, we social media gets a little bit of a bad rap, but this is where that social media can really help with like healing and community and
connection
versus a disconnect. And the other thing I wanted to talk about is like your personal IG account. It's like a beautiful creative outlet honoring what you and your husband kind of loved. How is that going? What have you learned along the way, and how has that helped your grieving process?
Yeah. You know, it's always, my Instagram has always been around food and baking and cooking, which I used to do a lot, you know, prior to becoming a widow. Just, I had a lot more time, and I also had, you know, a recipient of all the things that I used to make. Both my husband and I were foodies. Our kids, you know, enjoy good food and have, you know, they're not picky eaters on the land. They like to try new things. So, you know, I used to test things out all the time. Afterwards, I just didn't have that motivation or energy or time to do it. And it's slowly, you know, coming back. It's not anywhere where it used to be. You know, I am working full time and raising two teens, doesn't leave a lot of energy, mental energy really, to do it. But I do use, Instagram kind of as a medium to reflect on my grief journey, where I've grown, but also where I struggle, and using food kind of as that tool. And, you know, it's easier for me to express myself through writing and photography than to talk about it necessarily. And, you know, I found that, you know, the response that I get from people, especially friends, is when I do post about it, you know, they appreciate the realness, the rawness of what grief can look like. And they also appreciate kind of the insight into what I and others in similar situations are going through, because it's not something people usually talk about, especially now that I'm, you know, several years out. It's not, people forget, you know, life moves on, right? And, you know, the first year, maybe even two, people are kind of in tune, they're checking in, even if they haven't experienced grief themselves, you know, they understand that there's something going on. But, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 years out, most people expect that you've moved on and you're fine now. And that's not the case. And like we've talked about, you know, grief is always there. It's just, it changes. It looks different. Yeah. And then Instagram, I feel like it's also a way for me to keep my husband's memory alive. Most of the time I connect certain foods with certain memories that I have with him, or anecdotes of our life together. So, you know, I hope that, you know, my kids see it and it's something that they can go back to, kind of like a journal.
Yeah, no, seriously, for us, that was how we learned about your story, was through, at the time it was called Samaya's Whole Kitchen. Right. And that's how it was like, wow, these beautiful pictures of food and these, you know, recipes that look very difficult, but you made them pretty simple for people like us who regularly burn things. So it was that connection between you and complete strangers and into your world and into your story. And that's how we got to you and got you on, because we'd never heard of anything like this. Especially cooking to heal. If anything, we eat to heal. Like, yes. Zeba and I are emotional eaters. So that's all we know how to do. We're like, but to actually make beautiful things and like share that with people and find your own healing and to heal others through it is beautiful, because you are actually by training a registered dietitian, right? Correct? And you and Arthur, may Allah rest his soul and grant him gentle fardos, were both foodies. So to maintain that connection with him too through this is amazing. But you did mention grief looks different and changes. So why did Sumaya's whole kitchen now become chaiandchocolate.sk? Was there some kind of a conflict or some kind of confusion on Instagram? Was it a technical thing, or was there an actual like evolutionary process that you needed?
Yeah, to I just, Sumaya's whole kitchen was not ever my favorite tag in my handle when I first opened it. I had Instagram from almost the beginning, but it was a private account, and because sometimes I posted family things on it. But I also posted about food and travel and things, and I was like, oh, this can be public. So I played around with handles. At that time, I was like, this might lead into like a blog or a website or something, but that quickly kind of didn't pan out. Anyhow, long story short, nothing big. I just wanted something that felt more reflective of what I was posting. Chai and chocolate being my two favorite things in the world. So,
beautiful.
Yeah. So it was just kind of a personal preference.
Personal evolution. I love it. So we did a death and dying series a couple of months ago, and we had another young widow come on, somebody who, I think we were introduced to her, and, she's created some really brilliant things for children in particular, who are dealing with the loss of a parent. So it's just really, really beautiful. But one of the questions that we asked her, and we're going to ask the same thing of you, is, hers has been pretty recent, her loss much more recent than yours. But what would you want people to remember about Arthur? Are there like three things you think people could know about him, including what you alluded to earlier? Like people think, oh, after 5-6 years, you should be over this. Can you kind of weave that into those top three things?
Top three.
You can make them as many as you want. Like, feel free. Like, we're here. We're here for you.
I think one thing that I've been thinking about more recently, especially around the, there's been a lot of, discussion online about gender and femininity and toxic masculinity and, what it means to be a man and also what it means to be a Muslim man. And I really feel like, Arthur was, an amazing example of what it means to be a Muslim man, a Muslim husband, and a Muslim father. And, it actually saddens me really that my kids don't have him around to, to be that role model, to see what it looks like to be a Muslim man in this country. And also to not be able to see what a healthy Muslim marriage looks like also, like a positive relationship and a loving relationship. And it's really, yeah, I don't know. It is sad also just to see of kind of like the state of, the men in our community, unfortunately. Especially, the younger generation and alhamdulillah, like I had a good one, and he was amazing. And alhamdulillah, I had those years, and I just wish that, it could have been still around to, be an example, not just to my children, but also, our community. So that's one piece. The other thing that was, very much on the forefront, of when he was sick and, until his last few hours was, how he showed gratitude, despite everything that he was going through. His kind of theme, I guess, was always around gratitude, and his last, messages and talks with the kids were around gratitude and being, thanking everyone, people around you who are in your life, whether, you know, in a minimal way to a great way, whether, you know, with parents, with family. And, you know, that was his life. Basically, he was always, always showing gratitude, to people, to, his community, and then to Allah. And I think that shows, you know, what kind of mindset you have, right? And not taking things for granted, knowing where you stand, you know, what your purpose is. And with gratitude also comes generosity, right? So, you know, Mather was one of the most generous people I know with, you know, himself, his time, his wealth. And yeah, I think those are probably the top three.
Yeah. I didn't know we could talk about it like all the rest of the afternoon. And we're just so sad that we missed out on the opportunity of meeting the guy. But again, we know one day we all will. And I wouldn't be hasty about not giving credence to the seeds he did plant as an example to your children, because they weren't that young to see that example and to remember these like great things about him. So I think they're okay. You know, it would be great if he could be here and see your son walk the stage later this year or next year, whatever it is. But
yeah, it's just, you know, because they're at this age now, like they're teens, right? And their friends are, you know, that's their world, right? It's like dating and, you know, just coming into their own as individuals and adult, you know, young adults, and thinking about college. And so it's different, right? When you're little, you know, your parents are your world and you worship them and, you know, we can do no wrong really. But now there's lots of opinions.
Teenagers are just fickle. It's
okay. A lot of opinions and you know, that guidance is so critical at this age. And, you know, we're trying as much as I can, but it's tough being the solo parent, and, you know, it's a lonely job as well. And it's hard enough, right? When you have both parents.
Yeah. When there's two of you.
And so, it just feels doubly sometimes a little unfair.
Yeah. Well, may Allah make it easy for you and reward you for your sugar that we can feel it through the screen. And you're just such an inspiration to all of us. And we so appreciate you sharing this very raw history with us, your story with us.
Thank you for listening.
Jazakallah khair. Well, this is beautiful. We can't wait to have you back again, and hopefully it won't take us 3 years. So any new developments that come up, anything you want to share with us and our audience, please let us know. Otherwise, I will continue stalking you as I have been over the years, and then we will reconnect.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Jazakallah khair. Thanks for joining us today. Assalamu alaikum, everyone.
Thanks again for joining Zeba and Uzma on Momming While Muslim today.
Please email us your thoughts or questions and follow us on Facebook and Instagram, because this podcast was designed to cater your needs.
Make sure you check out the show notes to find the links and resources for this episode. And remember to help a mama out and leave a review of the show, as well as to like it on your podcast app of choice, because that helps us grow.
Tune in next week for another episode of Momming While Muslim. Assalamu alaikum, everyone.